KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in San Rafael, California.
I'm from San Jose.
Hayward, California.
Nopa.
Kind of lower Russian Hill.
I live across from El Metate in San Francisco.
Coming up, we'll hear how a blind woodworker helps other visually impaired artists feel comfortable in the woodshop.
Your eyeballs don't run a saw. Your eyeballs don't create the project. Your brain does all those things.
And we'll bring you some throwback jams from an all women of color DJ collective.
Hey, what's up, Oakland? Where you at?
We collectively do these nights. It's not just about one DJ. It's about like coming together for like the love of music.
There's a sense of like camaraderie and also like sisterhood.
That's coming up today on Cross Currents. There's this stretch of land in Napa County that's been a sanctuary for visually impaired people for over 60 years. The Enchanted Hills Camp was founded in 1950. It's a place where blind children and adults can swim, dance, play music, ride horses, and use a wood shop. This past year, the fires that ravaged the North Bay burned large portions of the camp. But KALW's Hannah Kingsley Ma visited as it's rebuilding and introduces us to the man at the heart of its woodworking program.
In the gallery below his woodshop, master woodworker George Wurzel has two portraits of himself on display. The first is like a scarecrow, hung in an antique wooden closet, a flannel shirt under a worn pair of overalls, pockets stuffed with tools.
I just thought it represented me, because that's me. I mean, I just, when you see me on the street, that's my normal garb.
The second is made up of 4,000 wood screws, drilled into a board at varying levels, so it becomes a three-dimensional projection of George's face, his straw hat, his big bushy beard. It makes a kind of musical chime when you run your hands over it.
So this is what your self-portrait sounds like?
Yeah, that's what I sound like.
This is a haptic gallery. All of the works are made to be touched. George is blind. He lost his sight as a little kid. And the beautiful things he makes out of wood, he wants you to experience them the same way he does, like this gnarled chunk of a redwood burl.
Now, if you take your thumb and forefinger and spin this in your hand, you will feel all of those lumps and bumps and curls.
To pull out the texture of sanded wood, he mists it with water so that the grain puffs up. He can tell by the swirls of fungus that a piece of wood has color.
The rot and the worms will both cause there to be different colors in the wood. And that's one of the things that I can't see, but that's one of the things I always inquire and ask about.
But George isn't just the creator of these objects. He's also a teacher at the Enchanted Hills Camp, which is now owned by the Lighthouse Center for the Blind. Upstairs above the gallery, there's a whole class of adults without sight using power tools. George has lived most of his life without being able to see. But many of his students lost their vision much later in life and have had to relearn how to do certain things.
The only thing I always tell people that I teach is how to feel confident with yourself.
Because regardless of what your vision is like, he says there's only one way to use a piece of equipment, the right way.
Your eyeballs don't run a saw. Your eyeballs don't create the project. Your brain does all those things.
There's a mixture of sighted and blind instructors. George brought in Jerry Cremeau to teach students how to use a lathe, a rotating tool that allows you to carve out round shapes, not because he has his vision, but because he's an expert in it. Their technique is the same.
Your eyes don't work, but still, your fingers do, and you know how thick this is. And you know how it should feel in the weight.
And I would have made the rim thinner, but I got scared.
The only thing that's noticeably different are the measuring tools, called click rulers.
It essentially is a round pipe with another piece of material that slides in and out of the round pipe with threads, 16 threads to the inch.
George's students are from all over. But none have traveled quite as far as Faye and Devi, who's here in the Bay Area to work on a project in collaboration with SF MoMA.
I'm originally from New Zealand, but I live in Australia now. And I'm an artist. I work mostly with blindness, trying to understand how blindness can generate new artistic and curatorial methods of practice.
Fayin says when she started to lose her vision, she had to rethink her whole approach to art.
I mean, I went through a period a few years ago where I got quite depressed because I was really scared and thought, you know, I was making these kinds of paintings that involve really detailed engraving that would take me months to make a tiny work. And I was also making books. And I just, my instant reaction was, well, I'm not going to be able to do either of those. But after a period of thinking about it, I realized, well, I can just start making paintings in a different way.
But she was still nervous about using a woodshop.
I was excited about coming here and particularly this weekend about actually using some power tools, which I've stayed away from since my vision dropped.
She trusts George, his years of experience and the reputation of Enchanted Hills Camp.
He does really simple things, like he tied a rubber band around one end so that I couldn't move my hand past that point, which means it wouldn't be cut off. You know, they're really basic things, but doing that, I knew I kind of had the framework to be able to just give it a go.
Becoming visually impaired has also changed the way she thinks about how accessible art is. Like, for instance, audio descriptions at museums that describe what a painting looks like if you can't see it. This is one from the Museum of Modern Art.
Water lilies. Oil on canvas.
Each of the canvases is completely devoted to water. The edge of the pond is never shown. It's a mysterious, shifting world.
Fayin says, especially as an artist, she has a hard time accepting there's one right way to describe an artwork.
Because I still do have some vision, sometimes I hear these and I think they're totally wrong. So therefore, if that's the position that I'm in, you know, I don't want to get to the point where I see less well and I'm just being told I have to accept, you know, this third person's description of this work.
Places that display art can feel really unwelcoming. Like, there's a specific way you're supposed to behave in galleries. Fayin has learned to be wary of their alarms.
Because for me to see the paintings, I have to be pretty close, so I set those things off all the time.
Fayin is here at the workshop working on a piece to broaden the way in which we experience art, informed in part by her life as a visually impaired person. She and a couple of others are making canes of different kinds of wood, with different kinds of knobs. Some jagged, some smooth, one that looks like the end of a honey dipper. And they're scraping them along the gallery floor, along the walls and the furniture. Imagine it kind of like an auditory or sensory dance piece. You'll be able to listen to and feel the movement of these canes from their big swooping sounds and their rattling vibrations.
So at the moment, we're just trying to figure out which canes give us information in different ways, and then we can hone the most useful ideas. Yeah. Jennifer, can I try that one there?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's that?
It's sort of like, it reminds me of drawing a bow over a string.
Outside the building where Fayin and her peers are practicing, there's a pond where campers can swim and a huge outdoor amphitheater where people gather for bonfires. Even some roaming goats that help graze the grass for fire abatement. George Wurzel, the woodworking teacher, lives here full-time. He came here after a career of architectural millwork, in part because of his own childhood experience in a camp for the blind in Michigan.
I love teaching kids that you shouldn't let people tell you what to do that don't have to live with the consequences of it. You know, you need to make those decisions as to what you want to be and who you want to do. And don't let other people tell you what they think you should do. You should figure those things out for yourself.
This year, Enchanted Hills is going to feel a little bit different. And that's because the Napa fires tore through parts of the camp and left others unscathed. Many of the cabins which campers have slept in for decades have been destroyed. This is the first workshop the camp is offering since the fires. They'll open again for the summer, but we'll have to take in fewer campers than usual. Reconstruction is underway, but there's a lot to be done. George, who is also the construction manager of the camp, is a big part of that process.
Oh, yeah. I love the fact that, you know, we'll be able to make something out of what had, you know, the trees that burned and had, were, you know, were killed in the fire. We're going to, you know, I'm going to preserve, you know, their integrity and turn them into useful things that will be around for the next, you know, 100 years for people to enjoy.
So Some of the redwoods that they had to cut down will be used as the interiors for new living spaces or dance floors. And down at the amphitheater, where the fire tickled the big slab benches that gathered around the center.
I'll just take a soft, very soft bristled brass brush and I'll brush all the loose stuff off. And then I'm going to go back in and just cover over all of that with a clear coat so everybody will be able to see and feel the results of the fire, because the fire did some cool things to the boards down there.
In George's workshop, the campers will be able to feel the effects of the fire, what it did to the wood that was down there, and the story of what it took to rebuild. In Napa, I'm Hannah Kingsley Ma for Cross Currents.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. And now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. All week long, we've been playing you this sound.
Hey, what's up, Oakland? Where you at?
We collectively do these nights. It's not just about one DJ. It's about, like, coming together for, like, the love of music.
There's a sense of, like, camaraderie and also, like, sisterhood.
Like, Ashley on vinyl, and it's, like, by women, for women, and, like, that space right there, you can't get that shit nowhere else.
They'll kick somebody out to protect you and, like, just make sure people don't mess with you.
You think you know where that is? Well, KALW's Marisol Medina Cadena takes us to her favorite dance party in Oakland.
I'm walking up Telegraph toward 23rd Street, and I'm hit with a delicious smell. It's coming from the pop-up food stand, Tacos El Último Baile. And behind the cloud of smoke rising from the grill, I see the taquero, swiftly chopping a batch of his well-seasoned carne asada. The night is young, but there's already a crowd of hungry bargoers chowing down, fueling up to dance the night away. I scarf down a couple tacos, then head inside the bar where a DJ, Paulina Alcaraz, is busy setting up.
We are at the Legionnaire Saloon in Oakland.
Paulina digs through her bolsa, a Mexican tote bag made from colorful plastic fibers. She pulls out a vinyl record by Mexican rock and roll band Los Apson.
I honestly never thought I would do something like this because, like, I'm a couch potato, to be honest.
And now when Paulina spins, she goes by DJ 96 Lagrimas.
And so, like, this is something that I wanted kind of to, like, prove to myself.
Behind the turntables, she drops the needle on her record. And sound check begins. Paulina is one of 9 women spinning records tonight. They're part of an all-women of color DJ collective, Chulita Vinyl Club. As they prep the stage, they apply lipstick and pose for Polaroid photos. The scene reminds me of my own homegirls, like how we hang out and listen to records in the comfort of our bedrooms.
It's gonna be a little awkward in the beginning, and then slowly, everybody's just gonna get super hype.
Mar Velez, another DJ in the collective, who goes by DJ Marvelous, says, although the night will start slow, once people get warmed up,
everybody's gonna be dancing, it's gonna get a little too hot up in here. Yeah, the ceiling's gonna start dripping, everybody's gonna think it's, like, everybody's sweat.
Mar told me she's been collecting vinyl since high school, but never thought about becoming a DJ. That changed when she learned about the Chulita Vinyl Club.
All the other Chulitas, like, just give you, like, so much confidence, like, you can do this.
The Chulita Vinyl Club started back in 2014, when one woman in Austin, Texas decided enough was enough with the male-dominated DJ scene. She and other vinyl-loving women got together to learn how to spin. Now there are 7 chapters, including this one in the Bay Area that alone has 20 members. And unlike other DJ crews, no genre is off limits.
Hello? Hey everyone, thank you for coming. I'm Lonely Girl. Hope you're enjoying the music. We're gonna start off the night. I hope everyone gets down and dance. This is a 3-year anniversary for Chulita Vinyl Club. Thank you for coming.
Lonely Girl, who you just heard, her real name is Amelia Berumen. The Chulitas taught her how to spin vinyl, and their support gives her confidence.
Being surrounded by your homegirls, you know, they have your back.
On the dance floor, the DJs let out their gritos. It's their rallying call. It tells the crowd, the Chulitas are here to combat gender and cultural barriers one record at a time.
I come from like a Mexican household where like I was not allowed to go out.
That's DJ Marvelous again. She says, compared to her brothers, she felt really restricted growing up. But she pursued her passions and now she's a DJ. Maude hopes the Chulitas inspire other women and non-binary folks to also follow their dreams.
Up in these streets, they call her DJ Marvelous! Just get high, high, high. Girl, you look so good.
On the dance floor, the crowd seems to really feel this bilingual mix of Spanish and English music. Elizabeth Mercado, a first-timer to the Chulita party, says,
it's very rare to find a place where you can listen to norteño and cumbia and everything else in one spot.
The music reminds me of cleaning on Saturday mornings, cruising in my older brother's car, and dancing at my friend's quinceañera. Tonight, we Latino millennials are celebrating our bicultural upbringings. And for some of us, the soundtrack growing up was cumbia, rock en español, or reggaeton. For others, it was funk, soul, or R&B. Like this one dude, Jose Madrigal, who really broke a sweat on the dance floor.
It's just really cool because this is the music I grew up with, not so much the cumbia and the salsa and stuff like that, but the funk, the soul, the disco, the oldies, that's the music I grew up with.
Is there a song you're hoping that they play tonight?
There are a bunch. I really want to hear some Evelyn Champagne King, Love Come Down.
On the dance floor, the disco ball is reflecting off the gold hoop earrings worn by many in the crowd. Everyone is busting out their best Soul Train moves. DJ Lonely Girl says women and femmes feel free to be themselves here. She remembers a recent night when a woman told the Chulitas that a man had touched her butt. The DJs immediately
pinpointed who it was. We got the bouncers and they took him out of here because it is a safe space. That's why it was created.
And for people of color who feel excluded from Oakland's changing culture, this night gives them a space to be unapologetically themselves.
Outside of this bubble, outside of this space, outside of Telegraph and 23rd, you know, it's some real happening.
That's Lulu Matute, another dancer I caught up with.
Our families are like at risk of deportation. Our families are being criminalized, but yet we're still able to find some beauty, you know, in the struggle to be able to turn the f up.
There's a saying in Spanish, la cultura cura, culture cures. And that's exactly what's happening tonight.
Big shout out to all the black and brown bodies in this motherfucking building. Celebrate yourself. Celebrate your worth.
Me and your daughter.
We're here every second Friday of the month. Come back. Come back and see us every second Friday of the month.
Growing up, I was kind of embarrassed that my family only listened to oldies and salsa. But in this space, I feel proud to be with other Latino millennials who grew up like me. Tonight feels like a family reunion. But instead of meeting my fourth cousin once removed, I'm meeting new homegirls. In Oakland, I'm Marisol Medina Cadena for Cross Currents.
Thanks, Marisol. Our winner this week is Selena Feliciano. We are sending you a KLW t-shirt. And for the rest of you, where do you think Audiograph should record next? Give us a call. Let us know. 415-264-7106. Again, that number, 415-264-7106.
I came to get down. I came to get down. So get out your seat and jump around.
And that's our show. Today's Cross Currents team includes Angela Johnston, Nina Gensler-Debs, Truk Nguyen, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Andrew Stelter, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are James Rollins, Jackie Sajiko, and Gabe Graben. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley-Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by Natalie Cressman. Born and raised in San Francisco, Cressman is a singer, songwriter, and trombonist. She performs Saturday, March 10th at the SF Jazz Center. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba. Tune into Cross Currents Monday at 5 for the final installment about major changes at an intersection in the middle of Google's headquarters in Mountain View.
We are about to embark on a momentous journey here. We're planning a new neighborhood in the North Bay Shore.
Why has it taken Mountain View City Council a decade to finalize a plan? Find out Monday at 5 on Cross Currents from KLW News.